Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you your fortune. It could be famous now, or maybe not. Like a leopard, can change its own spot. Right or wrong, if they were starlight, a blaze in the night sky, see the wicked fly. Caught in a winter's trail, got a tail of a tail. Caught in a winter's trail, got a tail of a tail. Caught in a winter's trail. Like a cosmetic who takes a whole lot, and that's a lot. Right on my lead, they were starlight, a blaze in the night sky. See the witches fly, caught in a witch's spell.
Well, Laurent, maybe we are trying to wake the dead. You know, it is Halloween week. Wow.
I'm talking about the increase in volume there that nearly blew my eardrums off.
Oh, I didn't touch the line. I just let it go.
It spiked. I had to take the earphones off. I'm putting them back on again. That's when I said, are you trying to wake the dead?
I don't know.
Because, you know, I'd be grateful.
I'm awake. You know, I don't know about you.
That's a goddamn pun, woman. Grateful dead. Get it again.
Yeah, well, you're kind of punny like that. Anyway. Yes, so anyway, everybody, welcome to the Halloween week carryover show. We're trying to do this so we don't have Halloween moving into next week. Yes,
I ain't carrying any dead bodies. You know that.
No, we are not.
Carry them over my shoulder.
No dead bodies and no dead weight. That's it. That's the way it goes.
You got any half-alive women?
Now look, just so you know, we have a caller. Hello, Dexter.
Hello. And
how are you?
The Grateful Dead, I enjoyed that pun, and that was a hell of an intro. That was a legendary intro. Jesus Christ. Yeah, that was loud, Laurent. I tuned in and it was like, holy cow, the dog started running for the bedroom.
That's funny. That's dirt.
Hopefully everybody's doing well this evening. Happy Halloween to everybody. I'm excited here tonight.
Happy Halloween.
Right.
Yeah, it's official. Today is the 31st. Amazing.
That's right. Halloween. I've already had trick-or-treaters.
Yeah, you had trick-or-treaters.
My grandkids, you know, that come the day before.
I didn't know about that. Nothing wrong
with
that.
I had a butterfly, I had a wild spaceman, and I had, I think it was Robin Hood.
Well, those are the best kind of trick-and-treaters.
Yeah, they're in full regalia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I agree with that. They're fun when they're young. You know. It's when they come to the door and they're about as tall as you are that it kind of loses something. You know? You know, when they come to the door and you can kind of look down and still see them standing there and they look up at you like, trick or treat. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know how it is. The big ones come and it kind of takes the thrill out of it because they got on their, you know, barely have on anything that looks like a costume in their hand, this pillowcase. Yeah, don't have that much candy. Glad they travel from
home. My grandma always talked about the story about her great-grandkids, and it was when she gave her great-granddaughter, Annika, the candy to give to her younger brother, and she said, I hope I don't trip and accidentally eat all his candy. You know, that's about the age when you want the kids coming over, you know. Hope they don't trip and accidentally eat all the other one's candy.
Yeah. The kids, they have all the right ideas. You know, they got it all figured out.
Yeah, they do.
It's pretty funny. Pretty funny. Oh, my goodness. So, I don't know. We have, you know, a few pieces on the board, and I think that we're going to be good here. Frank, that was not the Grateful Dead on singing for the intro, just so you know.
Who knows?
It was AC/DC. It was loud. Grateful Dead are never that loud. They're more mellow.
Are you AC or are you DC?
Well,
a little bit of it all.
Yeah, depends on what time it is. How's that? How's that for an answer? I get everybody. That'll get all.
I always thought you were a 220 volt kind of gal.
That'll get everybody rolling. Tomorrow they'll all be going, "Did you hear something? Did you hear something?" I can hear it now. I can hear it now. Get all their lips are flapping. Anyway, on that note. Anyhow, I guess we should start this off a little bit. We have time for jokes in between. I'm good for that. Even if they are bad jokes, you just have to deal with me. I think I'm going to put this one up by Eric Svensson. Just because it's on top and I have an audio. And then we can kick into the rest. So, here we go. Y'all ready? Yeah, you're all ready. I can get it.
Hail Thor. Modern day Viking musicians go primal. Metallic chest, silver plates, tongue. Metal vest on chest. Blue blowtorch. Lights join the surge. Mind unreels. Eel slips out of cloistered cave to join battle. Lighter flame becomes Thor's invincible hammer. Growl grunge of vocals lunge. Fearless battle plunge. Thor, Odin's son, protector of mankind, ride to meet your fate. Your destiny awaits. Thor, Slodin's son, protector of mankind, ride to meet your fate. Ragnarok awaits. Midgard serpent, Jormungandr meets its Waterloo. Primal serpent coils, devil's spawn broils. Jormungandr twists and turns, mighty in his wrath. The eyes are full of primal hate. No gentle persuasion here, clear-clipped whisper in Eve's ear. Mighty Thor, sledgehammer thy thunder. Mercenary musicians attack guitar strings. Vent your anger like blow blue torch stage lights. Valhalla melts down more metal swords. Quicksilver baubles chains shape. Serpents slither and slide. Regroup in cohesive counterattack. Piston pump, red blood in iron veins. Metallic hearts amass courage. Propulsion of Viking warrior cries. Growl grunge of vocals lunge. Fearless battle plunge. Warriors on stage attack. Smack static spectator bodies into movement. Feel the urge well up within. Swift surge, resistance purge. Modern musicians enlist a huge army. Mighty Thor grips the snake firmly by its tongue. Lifts his hammer high to strike. Soon his work is done. Victor sends the giant snake bleeding to the depth. Twilight of the thunder god, Ragnarok awaits. Hail Thor, end poem.
That was a wonderful SoundCloud. You know, there aren't that many characters in literature or in legend that would inspire an epic work like this. Thor is obviously one of them. Hercules, I'm sure, is another. And then there are probably a few others as well. But Thor has always stood out in my mind as one of those figures that is so appealing that he lasts. And I can't help but think in the face of the wonderful language that Eric used in this particular poem, this tribute to Thor, Odin's son, protector of mankind. Now, I don't know when the legends of Thor originated. I assume it goes way, way back. How far back, I'm not exactly sure. I don't know if it's 1,000, 2,000, whatever. But it strikes me as at least a little bit amusing for folks back then sitting around a fire talking about Thor. They could imagine that 2,000 years in the future, Thor would be this enormous figure in the movies that everybody went to see, comic books, books, graphic novels, etc., and that his hammer would live. And, I mean, you just look at Thor, the name itself, Thor. It commands respect. It is powerful. Well, I'm gibbering and jabbering on. Dexter, I'm sure you got a lot to say about this.
Yeah, this poem, you know, it almost seemed like Lemmy or something meets poetry or something. It was just so badass, and its delivery, you know, as you said, Laurent, the epic tale of Thor, it itself, just like you said, commands just power. But the way that he delivered it was so so precise, so just it did the tale justice. You know, there's so many people that tried to deliver Thor stories, and there's so many people that nowadays try to to regurgitate this. He did it so right with his use of language and just the way that he wrote this. This was just an incredible tale and a hell of a way to start the evening.
You got that right. I've always believed that Eric's voice is a transplant from the past, and he has come back to read to us. Because look, the way he reads it, it's like he's from that era. Just incredible. Gene, how about you?
I thought it was a great, a really great piece. Very well written, nicely read, you know, as always. I mean, how can I not say that, you know? Eric's work is always great like that, and his reads are always wonderful. I thought it was an interesting take on the concept of Halloween. I halfway wonder if it wasn't done, you know, well, for something else, but put in on the thought of maybe the costume angle of the store. I thought it was an interesting
tool. Directly about Halloween, but somehow it said something.
Well, that's kind of what I just said. I mean, it's like, it's not, I mean, it was written for something else. It says it right in the IN. But I think that the choice to put it in was based on maybe the concept of, you know, like costume of Thor. You know, it's one of those things you can get away with at Halloween, you know, put it up there and kind of put it on it. So I think it was clever thought. Nice work, Eric. Thank you so much. Now, Laurent, I'm putting one up for you. So if you do not mind.
Peter Solway brings us The Lonely Old Troll. Champion of greetings, behold you who crossed my bridge, told the best. Lonely old troll who lives beneath the bridge, dreams of oriental sluts. Take it off, in deepest voice, the fat screen by shaded stream, making an indecent profit. What trusting man, butter up. Call, halt, my friend, wishing to cross my stream. A drink to insist beneath this fully furnished bridge. Take a dusted seat, kick back, chew the fat, look 10 wives to smack. Honesty's kingdom, young lad trying for gentle betting, charge him steeply for crossing. Open another best friend can, have another wedding. Sing song concubines to wet his palm each medicated evening, fart by that soiled stream. Vapors of sulfur hailing the vultures in uniform. Flat screens stolen. All alone with phone, demand a refund, a better troll's life to begin. Have summited Everest, married Hillary, lived happily. Old troll, not living under a bridge, scamming money. Halt, young lass, plump with honey, mead, and creek bed. Old troll, what betting on rocks, having to call the cops. Power turned off. Shivering with acute indignation, an old queen spurned, demanding a wicked troll toll. End poem.
Nice read, Laurent.
Well, I will tell you what, scrolling down very briefly, beneath the poem, I see that Julie Buck quoted the famous quote by Hemingway, "There is nothing to writing. All you do is sit down at a typewriter and bleed." And yes, he has indeed bled. And there's all kinds of allusions and different tropes within this poem that call to mind the age of troll stories, which have been around for many centuries, and the new age of trolls, entirely different, doing vastly other things. Fascinating piece. Going to require a couple of reads to digest it completely. That's all right. Dexter, help me with this.
Well, you know, one thing that I enjoy about Peter's take, I guess, on this whole thing is the grittiness of it. You know, so many people love to stay fascinated about the glitz and the glamour of it, I guess, and glamorizing the old tale things. But Peter almost brings to the forefront here the grittiness of what it would have been to be a troll, and who the trolls maybe would have interacted with, you know, the Oriental sluts and the indecent people and these things, you know. It's just that Peter puts us, thrusts us into this old kind of underbelly of society to express this troll tale. And I enjoy the angle, and I appreciate the style in which that he writes quite a bit here for this one. So very well done.
Great comment. And yeah, he's very inventive. You really have to almost look at each three-line stanza by itself, suss out its internal meaning, and then see if it connects up or down. But you know, it's filled with subtleties. Like, for instance, that stanza, "To have summited Everest, married Hillary, lived happily." Well, of course, Edmund Hillary was the one who conquered Everest. So just to have that in there, because the modern day, you think of Hillary, you think of Hillary Clinton, God forbid. But at any rate, Gene, up to you.
Well, you know, Peter always has a way with things, and he always brings it into the today of it, you know, one way or another. and I know that he usually does put in his political views. I shouldn't say usually, but most of the work that I've read have pointed in that direction. And it's an interesting piece. And like you say, you have to take it each three lines at a time, you know, each one of them to kind of figure it out. And get down like that, it definitely makes you think. So I appreciate that very much. An interesting piece, Peter, and thanks for sharing. Absolutely. Yes, yes. Okay, now, Dex, I have one for you. We got a lot of female pieces tonight, so you guys got to get your high voices out in a little bit. So,
well, I'll get the vice grips out here in a little bit. So, but this is by Deaf Poet, "We're Among You." A werewolf hunter, you say. You stalk them by night, believing your prey, frolicking by full moonlight. A question to ask, if I may. Have you ever seen, during the warmth of day, in the glare of the sun? No, you say. What a pity, 'cause we're among you. Enough to populate this city, just watching, waiting, our due. We're kings of commerce, some, just a regular Joe. And it's just gotten worse, because now you know. You're in a bad place, as you can plainly see. The pulse pounds, thoughts race, eyes scream. I've got to flee. I smell your fear, taste your despair. You thought I was pure. I was a pure. Now a monster, not a monster, without a care. But alas, now not a place, no place to go, no place to hide. I promise, it won't be slow. Your death, the eternal ride. You see, I'm a wolf with morals. I don't kill, then gloat. I feel no arousals as I tear your throat. End poem.
Nice read, Dexter. Nice read. The last stanza contains the seeds of purity insofar as animals are concerned. You know, I'm a wolf with morals. I don't kill, then gloat. I feel no arousals as I tear out your throat. He's simply following his internal DNA as a wolf, doing what wolves do. And there's one werewolf hunter who was rather ill-prepared for who he met. I like this. This is this does say something. What monster are you? Maybe the monster is not the real monster. Who knows? Gene, how about you?
Well, I thought it was clever the way it was done in the voice of the werewolf and the thoughts thereof. You know, we're here. We're among you. We're living amongst you. And, you know, you've never seen us during the day. What a shame. You know, here we are. And then he starts talking like, yep. But, you know, it's not going to be a slow death. Don't you worry. It's going to be quick. And don't worry, I don't get anything out of, you know, I don't get off on tearing out your throat. I mean, you know, it's like, okay. You know, but I think it was, I just think it was well done. I think it had enough of a rough note to it to reflect that werewolf kind of, I don't want to say mentality, but state of mind maybe. It kind of reflected it well. I thought it was nice. Nicely done. Not nice. He wasn't real nice.
Nice comment, Gene. Thank you. Dexter, as a reader, what did you get from this?
Yeah, I thought that this was very Warren Zevon, you know. This was very kind of in a very articulate way and very kind of elegant way stating the side of the werewolf, you know. His, you know, the way that he expresses it in the song is kind of expressed in here. I smell your fear, taste your despair. There's very dark moments in it, which is very classic kind of Warren Zevon. But there's also then very, you know, comedic points in it too. Some just a regular Joe, and we're kings of commerce. So I thought that this was a very fitting piece for Halloween and just very well done as far as rhyming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Laurent, are you on mute?
Would I be on mute on Halloween, I ask you? Have you no faith? Of course I was on mute. I said, I said, it is now back to our fearless leader.
Mm. Yes. Sure you did. Oh. Here we go. I guess I have to read some of these because they're girly pieces, and we don't want you to all be too girly tonight.
Oh, Jesus, you think so?
Oh, Jesus, what's he had to do with this?
Well, honey, if I got to tell you, then you just don't want to hear the truth.
Okay, here we go. This is called Trick or Treat by Velvet Glove. You rang my doorbell, all of you, and shouted trick or treat. Three strapping lads stinking of booze, just barely on their feet. You'd kicked my pumpkins over, got all tangled in my webs. Well, how could I resist your charms? I asked you in instead. I dressed up specially tonight. I do for Halloween. It's one night that we flaunt ourselves and make sure that we're seen. I wear a strong disguising spell to live the normal way. But this one day we all come out. We witches love to play. So come, lads, let's see what you've got. Stop grinning, stand up straight. You should have gone right past my house, but now it's much too late. I've asked a few friends round tonight to show them my new toys. Now, have you lost all feeling yet? Such silly, sleepy boys. Oh, don't be scared. We rarely bite. We leave that to the vamps. But we won't leave you in the dark. I've lit the pumpkin lamps. We had to peel your clothes off, dears. They've leaked the fagged roof. You're all completely helpless now. You've nothing more to lose. Three witches in the prime of life, disguises cast aside. I'm sorry if we scare you, lads. Today we girls won't hide. We rarely get the chance to play with such amusing toys. You'll find you must obey commands like good, obedient boys. They woke up on the village green, all naked, cold, and sore. No memories of what went on that moonlit night before. Their hangovers were terrible. Took days to clear their heads. All swore they'd never drink again. All wished that they were dead. But oddly, they all shared weird dreams of women dressed in black, with wrinkled skin and graying hair, whose talons raked their backs, who raised their skirts in readiness, laid hands on their young flesh, breathed down on their priapic dicks with their hot graveyard breath. End poem.
Mm-hmm. Nice read.
Thank you.
I like the fact that you chose a long one to read. That was good. It was very impressive. As was this piece. Honestly, it was a great story delivered in imaginative phrasing and rhyme. I like the length and the flow. It was very worthy. Dexter, how did you like it?
Yeah, I enjoyed this quite a bit. It reminded me of this movie called Red State, which was kind of a chilling kind of tale about, age-old story about kind of, men, young males out trying to score some women, and then all of a sudden then it backfires, it's all good until it's not good, I guess is the end of the story moral, but this one is such a very well told story that it seems like an old Irish tale, or it seems like an old wives' tale thing from the early 16th century or something like that. It's just very well done, and it's just something that it's about a theme that will never die. I don't feel, it's perfect. Very well done.
I agree, and the subtext to all of this, I think, is that, back then, let's go back 3, 4, 5 centuries, whatever, women who were independent, strong-minded, smart, clever, insightful, were often cast as witches because they stepped outside of traditional bounds. And sirens do come in different guises, don't they? All right, Jean, what did you think?
Well, I thought it was excellent. I really did. I love the rhyme and meter. I thought it was a wonderful story. It was fun and enjoyable. It was great. It was fun to read. I just really thought you did an awesome job with this. So excellent job, Velvet Glove. Really, really nicely done. Yep. You all know I like my rhymes. Fun. Okay. So, now. All right, now, you might have to up your voice a little. Here we go. Oh,
I'm just all on Twitter.
I bet.
And, let's see. Okay. It's by Time Teller called Clothes Maketh the Man. And we have a quote by Ichabod Crane. Villainy wears many masks. None so dangerous as the mask of virtue. They are such nice boys, always in suits, ever so courteous. The fat one, he's seeing our elder's elder daughter. Yes, it's lovely to think of the young couple courting. Here, my Ida is so happy for them. She lives in hope, lives in hope. Bells round the corner. Yeah, lives in hopes. The taller one, he's a sensible one. Always got his head in books. Accounting, I think. And their business, running clubs. Lovely pair of gents. Always helping with the church and the WI. Two finer specimens of English manhood you won't find anywhere else. White love, don't go. Stay a while. Have a cuppa. It's a good brew here, you know. Now the kids, is that hubby of yours doing you right? Because if he ain't, you send him to me. I'll sort the fucker, I will. Oh, he is he? Well, that's good. And the nippers started school, have they? What, no? Married with kids? Well, I'll be. Time does fly. How is it I miss that? Don't be daft. I've been here all the time. You're having a laugh, ain't you? Well, I'll be a monkey spanner. Yeah. If what you say is true, love, those boys must be granddads by now. Is that Ben? You have a picture? What's that you say? Notorious. Two gangland monsters arrested and shot dead upon escape. Well, I never. Such nice lads they were. End poem.
Nice reason that.
Dexter, start us off, please.
Yeah, this was actually a very subtly chilling piece for what it was. You know, it starts off, or it just seems like such kind of almost a playful write, and your thoughts of Ichabod Crane or, you know, what they are, you know, initially coming in, and they are such nice boys, always in suits and ever so courteous. And how it kind of goes, and I'll sort the fuckers, I will. All of a sudden, it kind of just takes a sinister turn in the right, in the language of it. It's almost early, kind of almost serial killer-esque. Two gangland monsters shot dead upon escape. Will I never, such lads they were. You know, it's almost like enjoying the kill, enjoying the nastiness of life, and it's just quite the right. It really is, and what's really impressionable about the right is how well they captured into the style of the right, and how well they got into the mind of it all, and to be able to write this. So this is very skillfully done.
Yes, it was. Thank you, Dexter. The title, Clothes Maketh the Man, is certainly the direction the poem heads in, and initially, the lovely pair of gents, two finer specimens of English manhood, you know, always dressed well, always in suits ever so courteous, and then only to discover that all is not well, that her memory has betrayed her a little bit, that she hasn't really kept up, but she has to defend her opinion when she's asked, you know, have you been here all along? Don't be daft, I've been here all the time. I like the way she did this, and it was dark, and it speaks to perceptions and, you know, you have a vision of someone at a certain age, and then you kind of lose track. And then years later, you pick up on the storyline of their lives, and you can be surprised or dismayed or just be very normal about what you hear. And then you find out that things have gone very bad with these two. And I like that. It totally suited the evening. Gene, what did you think?
You know, I thought this was a really nicely done piece. I won't want to twist up my words on this. I thought the one-sided dialogue was very clever, and that kind of gave it a kind of a creepy note right there, because you just seeing one side, and it's like, okay, what's happening? And the character was interesting because it seems that the character was listening about things and keeping things, you got to see the air quotes, in check. You know, the nice boys that were gunned down, you kind of wonder if there wasn't a little help there. Like a little hocus pocus going on. Like, you know, she saw the bad in them and set him out there
focus,
to...
I'm
sorry?
Nothing. I just said hocusy pocusy.
Oh, well, yeah. It just seemed like she, you know, has the husband, you know, you let me know, you send them to me, you know, and all those little innuendos. And then it gets down there to the end, and it's, you know, well, I never. Such nice lads they were. But it just seems that, I don't know, it just seems that there was more input from the character than meets the eye in my head. So, you know, I'm a little twisted, so I have to just kind of take that into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Dex, that brings me to you. So, okay. Now, pinch your, you know, get the... Yeah, you get up the vocals here.
Awesome. Well, let me know. So it is, what do we have here? The Casey Day?
Yes.
This is Firefly by Casey Day. There is something at work in my soul, which I do not understand. Don't want to cease. Will not give up and listen. To lose control of it all would shatter my existence. Silent killer, snake-like grip holding my windpipe. Pluck the apple from the tree while it's still ripe. The sun might run away, but I'm holding steady. I fight the darkness and through its heavy. I'll carry your burdens too, if you let me. It's as simple as a flicker. You and I, we're fireflies. Won't last but a moment. We light up the night. It's in my brain circulating, breaking my pride. But I'll always climb the mountains, avalanching inside. The sun might run away, but I'm holding steady. I fight the darkness and through its heavy. I'll carry your burdens too, if you let me. Slay the dragon and I cut off Medusa's head. Even had a talk with some monsters under my bed. Life carries on and carries us on our back. We explore. The universe was made for me. How much more can I ask for? More. The sun might run away, but I'm holding steady. I fight the darkness, and through its heavy, I'll carry your burdens too, if you let me. What a beautiful thing it is to exist. Firefly, flicker through the darkness. End poem.
Well read, Dexter. Thank you. Well, those last two lines, firefly, flicker through the darkness. What a beautiful thing it is to exist. Firefly flicker through the darkness. It's a wonderful metaphor for human beings. I mean, 80 years isn't bad in terms of length. It's a long time, quite frankly. But in the scope of the universe, in the scope of things, yeah, we are just firefly flickering once and then we're done. And, of course, she reiterates that point at the beginning. Won't last but a moment. We light up the night. Yes, we do. And here's a woman that just wants to appreciate life, really. And she has that burden that she has to carry and is willing to carry. So that stanza that says, the sun might run away, but I'm holding steady. I fight the darkness, and though it's heavy, I'll carry your burdens too, if you let me. What a wonderful thing to have someone willing to shoulder not only her burden, but yours as well. It's a great piece, it really is. Jean, would you comment?
Yes. I think Casey did, a good job with this. I think it was dark enough, for Halloween week. Yet, it was a great lyrical piece. It was clever because it kind of met both of those. You know, the lines throughout were kind of, well, they weren't kind of, but telling a darker tale. And she did it in a really interesting way, because I don't know if I would have ever thought to do something lyrical, to reflect Halloween. I just don't know that I ever would have thought that way. And I think that was, it was just clever and well done. Let's put it that way. Great job, Casey. Thanks for sharing with us. Yes, hang on 1 second. Here we go. Okay, I have that done. That's a good thing. Let me see. Got it. Yeah. That's one. Okay. Now, Laurent, I have this one for you. Oh, no. I think it's my turn, isn't it? Or is it your turn? I think I'll read this one.
No, I haven't been keeping track.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I was, but then I lost track of myself. So here we go. Yeah, I tell the truth.
So you're talking about Think Fairy 5?
Yeah, I'm going to read it.
Okay.
This is called "I Will Not Open My Eyes" by Pink Fairy 5. I wake up and stare at the clock. My heartbeat is ridiculous. I am having a heart attack, or is there really someone there? Noting the time, I cringe. Midnight on All Hallows' Eve. Anything can happen, and I am helpless to stop it. The air is ominous. Shadows creep closer and peer at me. I flip my eyes tightly shut, hoping to be left alone this time. There is no escape. My hair is touched in my forehead. I refuse to look. My heartbeat is a rapid drumbeat now. They are back. My internal voice observes. I try to shush her. She will not be quieted. A finger teases up my spine, scaring me. I will not open my eyes. I cannot open my eyes. Terrified, I open my eyes and note the clock watching me. And home.
Nice read, dear. Dexter, you want to start us off?
Yeah, this is a very poem that really touches into people that have an issue with anxiety. I will not open my eyes. I wake up and stare at the clock. My heartbeat is ridiculous. Am I having a heart attack, or is there really someone here? This is something that people have with anxiety. And when I went in on, originally, and I had gotten prescribed pills for anxiety, I thought I went and told them that I was having a heart attack. And he said, no, that this is something that you have with anxiety. And then you go and you look back and it says that there's no escape. My hair touches my forehead. I refuse to look. My heartbeat is rapid, drumbeat now. I will not open my eyes. I cannot open my eyes. Terrified, I open my eyes and know the clock watching me. This is just a classic poem that I think is becoming ever so more relatable because of the amount of people that deal with this struggle. This is a brilliant poem by Pink Fairies, and very well captures the moment of that anxiety.
All right.
Yep. I was just praising Dexter. I thought he hit the nail right on the head with that comment. It's a really nice insight, because I didn't chalk it up to anxiety, but what I was chalking it up to was the power of the human mind to bedevil itself, to create the fear that is groundless, in other words. So you can look at it from that point of view, but more subtly, yeah, the anxiety that creeps, only to open your eyes, finally. And all of a sudden we're faced with the mundane, the clock face, and the clock watching me. And I like that. That was a great comment you made, Dexter. Thank you. And Gene.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I thought it was a scary and kind of a creepy write. It was well written, and I think most all of us have woken up at one time or another, you know, kind of afraid to face whatever it is we feel or sense in front of us, you know. You hear something and you kind of lay there and you're just a little bit leery about checking it out, you know, because once you open your eyes, you got to deal with whatever it is. Doesn't matter what, you know. And I thought that her emotions were well conveyed in this. I think she really got her point across. But what's prompt 10? Men say that in this midnight hour, the disembodied have power. So, you know, it's definitely that kind of a creepy, scary kind of, you know, thought. So, anyway, I think she did a great job. Absolutely. Wait, I have to run over here now, find the poem. I'm not sure where I'm going to go. Okay, let's see. Okay. Now, Laurent, I think that you're next up, because I think I screwed it up somehow. I do. But, you know, no surprises there. Yes. I am correct. Laurent, it's your turn. There you go. Piece by Afaziana. Okay, am I here?
No, I'm here. I'm just preparing. Hazards of Hypocrisy Heroes by Afaziana. Cruelty from the confrontational is commonplace. I take it unflinching if it's to my face. Hate holds no power when hurled directly. I understand they lash out incorrectly. The only people I fear are zealots of any cause. Fanatic believers will do anything without pause. The misguided more hazardous than the malicious. Those touting virtue in methods most vicious. There is something at work in my soul which I do not understand. Mary Shelley. Slivers of old trauma splice my spirit. On the surface healed with a touch of grit. Warmth brings them to the surface, drawn out when a normalcy makes me nervous. A soul that may have once been pure has infection far beyond a cure. End poem. That was nice. Next, I'll ask you to start again.
You know, one thing that kind of stood out to me about this is that how I started off writing was having a comfort in rhyming. And as I kind of aged in writing, how it became almost uncomfortable in rhyming. But she touches on this so well. You know, hazards of hypocrisy heroes. Hate holds no power when hurled directly. I understand they lash out incorrectly. There's so much truth within that statement that it could stand alone. And it's gone. It's almost like I've gone full circle with appreciating when I started kind of going out, appreciating those that didn't rhyme, then to fully appreciating those that did rhyme. This poem really captures that appreciation for those that do rhyme, because there's so much truth within this poem that it almost seemed as if it never was a rhyming poem. It just was a standalone piece. This is a very well done write and very well read by you, Laurent, and I appreciate Afasiana for penning this. Very well done.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I like this as well. I thought it was a strong and a split into two, as it were, going from quotes from two rather notorious, in the best sense of the word, individuals. I like that one phrase in the second part, drawn out when normalcy makes me nervous. A soul that may have once been pure has an infection beyond a cure. But when people seem normal but aren't, that's definitely kind of creepy, because you can almost sense it, really.
Better leave me out of it.
Huh?
You better leave me out of it.
Well, on that note, I'm simply going to turn it over to you. I'm just going to turn it over to you. Your comment, please.
I thought it was a great piece. I thought it was well written and great reflections of the two chosen prompts. I think that she really did a wonderful job with it, and I enjoyed it very much. Oh, how's that? And you missed the joke of what I said, I believe. So I behave myself. Uh-huh. Okay. Dexter. Oh, Dexter. Yeah, Dexter heard me, I think. Mm-hmm. Okay, Dex. Now, look, you really need to stub your toe. But I'm about to redo this one.
All right. Here we go. Betty Page. My Last Breath, 10/26/21. Number 3,530. Dear God, that's a hell of a number, Betty Page.
Mm-hmm.
But my last breath, I'm suffocating, coughing, wheezing, seems endless, panicking with fright, begging, die, just live. Fear venomously bites me, poison pierces heart. I'm gasping for air. Is this how I'm remembered? Beggar at death's door, crying without tears. Faraway dreams abandoned. My time has run out. I'm just so alone. Fierce darkness consumes my soul. Oh, God, forgive me. I don't want to die, yet struggles so hard to live. I am unloved. I'm choking, gasping, just to breathe life's salty air. And then there's nothing. End poem.
Nice read, Dex.
Very nice read, Dex. I wonder if this isn't referring somehow to the pandemic, to the way people act in the last rigors of trying to breathe. I'm gasping for air. I'm suffocating, coughing, wheezing, panicking with fright. I'm choking, gasping, just to breathe light, salty air, and then there's nothing. Wow. No, there seems to be more to it than just that. But it was the prompt. For God's sake, quick, quick, put me to sleep, or quick, waken me quick. Yeah, I guess I could go with that, but you know, if you're going to interpret it differently, it's equally valid. you know, life can be so strenuous, so cloying, so choking at times that it doesn't let us breathe. There's too much stress. The anxiety that Dexter mentioned before as well, all of those things combine to make it feel as if we can't breathe, and for God's sakes, either let me die or let me wake up, one of the two. Dex, would you comment, please?
Yeah, I agree completely. And you know, just the choking, the gasping, it does feel so much, you know, like a COVID poem. But at the same time, though, it feels so fitting about just a life poem nowadays. You know, we talk about COVID being such an issue, but nowadays just living is such an ordeal nowadays, an ordeal, that it just seems so much of a struggle. Life and just what we knew of it has become such a struggle nowadays. And I feel like she just captured just, you know, an everyday person essence so much in this write. And this is just very well done. Betty Page always is not one to shy away from sinking the hot iron in. So this is just very well done.
Thank you, Dexter. And Jean?
I think this was nicely written, and I thought it was a great take on the prompt. But when you read the prompt, you missed one thing. The end of the prompt says, "I say to you, I am dead." That's the tail quote. So it's an interesting take on the prompt, for sure. And I think that she really did nail it, you know, because it just goes through those steps, you know, she's not being able to breathe and, you know, she's coming to the realization that, you know, there's nothing. I'm choking, gasping, just to breathe life's salty air. You know, it's that struggle to stay alive. And then, you know, when there's nothing, that's it. It's over. So it was a kind of a, I don't know, it gave you a nasty turn, that's for sure. That's what I can say about it. Can't imagine. Terrible way to go. Terrible way. Okay, so next I have a piece by Captain B2, and I have a SoundCloud for that one. So let me hit this button.
Counterfeit conscience. As I was walking down the stair, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. Oh, how I wish he'd go away. From Antigonish by Hugh Mearns. Poem. As I was walking down the stair, I could not believe who I saw there. He had my face. He had my name. But somehow, we were not the same. My name, my clothes, my birth date, too. Not a detail does he eschew. I see him in shadows everywhere. He's ever present as the air. We seem to share both time and space. He follows me from place to place, and though his voice I barely hear, his dictates echo in my ear. This double thwarting all my plans, he stops my game and ties my hands. He dogs my steps, he walks my path, and he persists despite my wrath. He labels me a hedonist. To his abuse I cry, desist. Still he continues his assault, ever constantly finding fault. His discontent with my milieu, the relentless subject of his review. His constant onslaught soon must end, or into madness I will descend. I weary of this storm on drum, caused by his endless harangue. His repeating voice within my head will only stop once he is dead. angel or devil, it matters not. I'll not find peace till he is shot. I must be quit of this carnival freak in my life. I must be unique. I set my plan, take aim, and then relax, not to hear his voice again. But instead of my being set free, it seems that I have murdered me. End poem.
Well, I think I like this very much. One of Captain Beach's better pieces, The Counterfeit Conscience. The original stanza, Antagonist by Hugh Mearns, sets the tone for the whole piece, because Bobby takes those four lines and, maintaining structure and rhythm and rhyme, she creates from whole cloth the extension of those four lines. And all the way through, you see the dichotomy between the original and the imitation, of course, what I assume is the conscience. And in murdering the conscience, murders himself. But conscience doesn't really fit, because we're looking at a double of him, but someone who seems to thwart him from time to time to time, to attack him. And maybe it is a conscience. Maybe it is the conscience. So, very clever, very well written. A superior piece, I think. Dexter.
You know, I couldn't agree more when you say a superior piece. You know, I think that she captured it well. You know, when the prompt was, as I was walking down the stair, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. Oh, how I wish he'd go away. I mean, what a prompt about this never-ending struggle about trying to get away from yourself. I mean, I think that really in itself it captures the essence of the poet, because the avenue of poetry gives the poet the route to escape themselves. So this poem really does capture that, just really what is at the core of the reason why poetry exists. And so that's why this poem is so striking, I think, is because it captures it caters to the people that are purists in poetry, but it also captures to the people that just live off the emotion in poetry, because this is a very emotional poem also. This is just a very, very well-written piece by Captain B2.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you. And Jean.
Well, I totally agree. It was an excellent piece. And, you know, as the lead-in by Hugh Mearns was an excellent start for this piece. She definitely worked off of that very well. And, you know, that you know, I'm not all up to date on my psychology, you know, terms, but I'm going to say that schizophrenic quality or multiple personality things, you know, where you're fighting against yourself and the anguish and there we go again, searching for words. But it really, you know, it does. That's the reflection that you get all throughout this piece. And when you get down to the end, it's like, it seems that I have murdered me. Yeah, it's a little haunting, and well done. So great job, Bobby. Well done. Nice piece. Okay. Next one. This one is for you, Laurent.
Judge, Jury, Convict by Kels Miles. A judge considered the bench, gavel and ruling, decisive hand. Peer jurors, minds clenched, laying blame or claim insane. Perjured, esteem of duty and the losses of lost innocent lives. Imprisoned by fear and strife, in locked cages, walled off. Fates determined an outcome in the courses of a guard's roam. Warrens warded off, unrewarded. Existence granted as unworthy. Witnessing your own destruction, called upon as a distant distraction, hereby sworn to truth abstraction, defenses worn down by persecution, honesty decreed of a guilty plea, convicted of a killing spree between fenced-in gangs and drugging kings, as holier-than-thou customers sing. Regrets are forged by the banging gavel, the clang of locks become unraveled. Resonating results of a life of upheaval, cuff-cussing, curses at fate abysmal. However, the judges nor their juries can stop the rolling voice's fury, whispering down conviction's corridors, nor of gunfire screaming echoes purity. Beating the bars with bare, guiltless fists, relentless and soundless, endless pitches. Bodies drop spirits, voiced remittances, thumps, thuds, to thud admissions. Convicted mind, a constant loop, charged with withering, whispering voices altered. Whirlpool of whirling thoughts faltering. Clone sanity, and guilty edges of a barrage. End poem.
Nice read, Lars.
Dexter, could you take that comment, please?
Yeah. One thing that I always thought that Cal has done extremely well is convey emotion. But the fact that she was able to channel the emotion of a convict or somebody in this situation, I feel as well as she has been able to convey the emotion of herself throughout her own stories is very telling of her talent as a writer. I don't necessarily know if this piece would be as well ingested or digested if I didn't previously know her works. Her works are very personal. And so to know what she has written before and to be able to transform all of that into this work of a convict and as somebody of being locked up, I just think that this is a very, very talented write by her that Michael missed by others, but I would surely hope not. So, very well done.
Great.
Thank you. And I will echo those sentiments. Quite a piece. Jean?
Okay. I think Kel did an excellent job with this. Really a great tale told. And I have to agree with you, Zach. She definitely conveyed emotion in this. And Laurent, definitely his read just, helped it along a little bit more. So it was really nicely done. Great piece and great read, Laurent. Now, where am I? Okay, I got Laurent's, poor Laurent's fading on me. Can't do it, Laurent. four decks, he doesn't have to deal with me all the time. He can't have that happen to him. But
you better not have more than a couple of poems left, because this boy...
Okay,
I have a hard time keeping the eyes open.
We have four left. Four. That's it. After this one, we have four.
I'm going to turn all four right over to Dexter now.
All right, here we go. This is the Balloon Article by Star BG. Balloon in the shape of a butterfly was seen moving across lavender skies, mannered by a fairy mistress, Ainsworth, adorned with purple fluorescent wings. It was heading west. It reached an altitude of nearly 30,000 feet, came from a forest in Ireland, crossing Atlantic Ocean in 3 days, and could be seen in sky at least 3 in the afternoon. Articles stated that Fairy Ainsworth had perfect flying weather. Air was sweet. Clouds were few, and dense vapors were bristle channel made for views magnificent. And it was a feat never tried before. People gathered in droves to get a peek in front of the Sun's Times, who printed the article. They swallowed up newspapers till supply dwindled. Hours passed when dust cleared. No balloon with Mistress Fairy Ainsworth was seen. Those who had seen fairies knew that they had grand wings. Don't need a balloon to fly. End poem.
Nice job.
Great feedback.
Nice job.
You definitely don't need a balloon to fly. But it certainly helps if you don't have the wings. There was a time when air travel was a hazardous thing. And kind of began with the balloons in France. I don't remember the name of the gentleman who was influential in that regard, but balloons are very popular. First time you could actually look down on the earth. And any kind of a crossing was always met as something of a challenge. It was always written up in the newspapers, etc. And I think it harkens back to those days. Very, very simply. Well, simply is entirely the wrong word. So let me backtrack a bit. And simply say that the Great Balloon Hoax, which is also part of the prompt, I think, kind of puzzles me. Maybe she never tip off at all. Well, we'll let Dexter tell us if she did or she didn't. Dexter?
Well, I would agree. I thought this was a very beautiful piece. I thought that the language and everything tied into the time of when this piece should have been written. And it just was a very, very fitting piece to feature the feats and the striking feats that these people have captured over the course of time. You know, it's something that we almost take for granted nowadays about flying and about people that are in the air. But people over the course of time have done these things and have really risked their lives, and I think that this piece captures all of that. So very well done, Star BG. She always has a little bit of twist of history within her rights too, so I think that I enjoy that a lot.
Nice stuff. Thank you. Jean, back to you.
Okay, well, Star, I think Star did a great job. It was a story well told. Much enjoyed. It was interesting. I'm not sure the prompt's origin, but hey, it worked. Oh, it's Short Stories of Poe. So I'm not sure. I don't know anything about that crossover between the Balloon article and sorry. I don't know how to cross-reference that, but it was nicely done. Okay, Laurent, I'm going to let you read this one, and then we're going to leave you off the hook.
God blimey, Mom. I'm appreciative of that.
Okay, can we do that in English this time?
Okay. Where am I here? What am I doing? Refresh. Hey, Heartless. Hey, Heartless. Below the rake. For the time you waited in the weeds, slithering through my undergarments, positioning to bite me, a thousand injuries, and I was your perfect fruit, the apple of your eye. The peel may feel fresh long after the core dies. Parade madness. A home you'll go? Your health is precious, and it's no matter to me how twisted the evening goes. Chambers stuck, let's tipsy downtown, see what tickles our Mardi Gras toes. Bruised in the embrace of your excessive warmth, you have the member of a motley jester, and I know you of old, so I bend, show you the trowel beneath my folds. Your eyes, fuzzy streetlights. Come, let us go, and you stumble, sticking your hands in cobweb hair. No weak point, trusting a spider won't bite, because it enjoys the shivering. The tinkling of the elevator bells, the pleasure of a redresser. Why so cold? Helps to harden the tips, you say. And you laugh heartily, forgetting the time you set fire to my family tree. Immolation, molestation, burning those closest to me. I didn't know you had a fetish. You joke as I fetter you to the posts. I smile, as much you don't know. And I point through the window, bricks exposed and broken where fireworks explode. Just think of those. You whimper each time my chamber unloads. This is for my niece. Snake below the rake. Rest in peace. And on.
Well done, Laurent. Well done.
I'll tell you, as I read this, I started to get emotional. I began to see what it was all about. Wow. This is if you see as my French, this is a fornicating masterpiece. It's really good. And with that, I'll let Dex take over.
Well, I would have to agree, you know, the way that this one is expressed is expressed from a person from such an era that, you know, that they talk about burning down and almost eliminating such a time, such a space, you know, that this person embraces and almost eviscerates a certain uneasiness that comes with a certain era and comes closer with the person almost because of it. So there is a deep down sensualness to this rite and at its core, and I think that it captures it very well. And you know, it's one that that has been getting along for a very long time, because there's these, you know, not to say that it's wrong or it's right, but the people from this guild or from this core have been writing and have been feeling like this for a very long time. This rite is at the very essence of our existence as far as writing, you know. So I think that this rite was very well done, period.
Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. And Jean, back to you.
I think this is an excellent piece and a great reflection of the revenge that she referenced from the prompt. She said prompt 3, the cask of Amontillado, the story of revenge. And this definitely does that. It was just a really well-written piece. So, okay. And, you know, I was kind of mistaken about the count, because two of those were not carryovers. So I made my apologies. I should have slipped them off of the board earlier. So here we go. This is the last one, and this is by Frank. So let me put it on as we speak.
Begin. Excerpts from the letter found by Dr. Husky Leon of Dr. Jekyll. To those that I hold a fond affection, I am to them forever Dr. Henry Jekyll, but to the rest of the world I am the alter ego known as the evil Edward Hyde, the menacious madman that had usurped my soul was created by me, in search of the eternal elixir to indulge my wicked perversions unmatched. Perhaps I am indeed a devious man that has lost his little mind in the end, doomed to the perdition of my moral corruption in my untamed desires, consumed by my insatiable hunger for the profligation of quotidian whims, and to the chilling condemnation of my infernal destiny unfolding then. The terrible monster in me lurks in the creepy crevices of the darkness, waiting to be unleashed like a blazing ball of an uncontrollable demonic force, a voracious fiend and spooky stalker of human fragility and heightened fear, for his impenetrable impulses cannot be controlled so easily by rationality. I am the careless creation of a spiraling madness so indomitable and implacable, a wretched face that no human shall ever bear its ineffable burden all alone, the scary shadow of the nocturnal carousal and boutard of merry revellers. Death follows me around the corner with a haunting vengeance awaiting. Quickly, I am succumbing to the monster that I have become now. The horrendous hide feeding on my unhinged mind, bursting at the seams. Pursued by the nefarious nightmare, and my devilish altered evil awakened, for I am bloody loath, and my humanity in my insanity to him unwittingly. I shall lock myself in the laboratory, commit the act of suicide by poison, by the same serum that once had transformed me into a hideous beast, freeing myself from those heavy shackles of my tormented mind. For it is the only way I can be rid of the presence of the evil Edward Hyde. Yes. Yes. Free at last.
Well, Dex, what do you think about that one?
That was one of my favorite reads by Frank, and I absolutely love anything that has to do with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because I think that it has so much to do with today. Because, I mean, there's really a lot to do with today as far as drug use and everything else. But one thing that I look for when I look for somebody doing any type of adaption as far as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is kind of almost letting themselves go. And I felt like Frank kind of, in a way, let himself go on this reading of it. And his laugh at the end was proof of that. So very well done. And I thought that this was just a very awesome piece and very fitting of a Halloween night. So amazing, right?
Yeah, I thought it was a great take on Mr. Hyde. Very well put together piece. And you know, the audios are always great. And that laugh at the end, well, that's just Frank's signature. You know, he does it at the end of all of his pieces. And it's, I find it interesting. You know, he always makes sure he goes out with a place to be able to do that. So that's always interesting. But I definitely think that he, you know, he aced that one. I mean, he's very good at his dark rites. You know, he gets in there and he kind of, I don't know, just makes it real creepy and does it very well. So you got to give the devil his due, right? Good job. Nice job, Frank, and thanks for sharing with us. And actually, that was the tail end of all of our carryovers. The other two I slipped off of the board. I mean, we could do them. It's just that we made the space for carryovers, and I didn't want to add to them because it's been a long week. Tomorrow's our last Halloween show. Well, later tonight, actually. And I think everybody's just about had enough. It's a week. A week's a long time. But it's been fun, and there's been lots of different angles on Halloween and most enjoyable. And Monday, I hope everyone will take a chance and join us for our celebration of the Day of the Dead. Monday and Tuesday, we're celebrating, which was the first and the second, are the 2 days that they celebrate the Day of the Dead. And I hope everyone will contribute a poem for, you know, showing, you know, honoring those that they've lost, you know, family, friends, sibling. I don't know, it's family, is it all inclusive? Lou is doing Monday, and the Twisted Sisters will be doing Tuesday. And, we want to celebrate the lives, and we want to honor them. So anyone who can write for us, that would be wonderful. It can be a poet you met here on All Poetry. It could be a friend you know from, you know, the other side of the screen. We've all lost someone at some point. And I think someone had said to Luyu that they didn't have any children and their pets were their family. And they asked if it would be all right. Absolutely. The Day of the Dead, when I was looking through, they had animals, pets. There's no limit to love. I mean, we respect our dead no matter who they are or, you know, what have you. So, anyway, that's the story for Monday and Tuesday. Tomorrow night, Rex, everybody, I don't know if he's still in need of rights, but if you check the board, we'll find out. It would be fun. So, we want to keep things rolling and have a good time again tomorrow night. And everybody, stay safe tomorrow. And everybody, take care of each other. That's the trick in life anymore. Anyway, I will talk to you all soon. Dex, thanks for calling in and hanging out with us. I appreciate it. And Laurent, hey, thanks for staying up and hanging. You almost made it. Okay, thanks, Dex, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay? Have a good night.